The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
I think a lot of people are going to be watching on tonight on Virgin Media One at 10 o'clock. The first full television presidential debate. Of course, there was a debate on the Claire Byrne show on Monday night. Michael D. Higgins did not participate. He told us on this programme yesterday that he was reading the Public Health Alcohol Bill instead and only caught highlights of the debate afterwards, that he had work to do. Sean Gallagher on television last night on The Tonight Show on Virgin Media One said he wouldn't, because he'd made a commitment to not turn up when Michael D. would not turn up. I wonder if he's regretting that now, given that he's down to 12% in the latest opinion poll. But I also wonder how nervous he's going to be tonight, because he faces Pat Kenny again. And let's remember the extraordinary moment of the 2011 campaign on the Frontline programme when Sean Gallagher's campaign came apart.
A development which I want to put to Sean Gallagher on the Martin McGuinness for President Twitter account. Sinn Féin are saying they're going to produce the man who gave you the cheque for $5,000. Now, do you want to change what you said, or are you still saying that it just simply didn't happen? Are they up to dirty tricks or what?
Well, you know, I've always tried to stay above any negative campaigning, and I understand from a query during the week in one of the newspapers, and when my campaign team back sent back the information on the said character, I don't want to cast any aspersions on him.
So you know who he is?
He's a convicted criminal, a fuel smuggler, investigated by the Criminal Assets Bureau, and rented the office out to Gerry Adams, Martin's colleague, in the last general election. I don't want to get involved in this. I don't believe...
Did you get a cheque from this guy or not?
Well, I have no recollection of getting a cheque from this guy. I can tell you. Let me explain this very simply.
The man said you want this house, Sean.
I explained that there were two or three people that I asked, invited. I don't know the man very well that's in question, so...
No, but hang on a second. You're saying that you went around to a fuel smuggler and all sorts of things and invited him to a Fianna Fáil do?
I'm telling you quite simply, Pat, I was asked...
So you've labelled him one thing and yet you invited him. So which is it? Or well, are you happy with both?
I'm not aware. I wasn't aware at the time 3 years ago. I'm just making the point that I was asked to pass the information on to local business communities, which I did. I want to say one thing. This is not what the presidential election should be about.
Still dramatic, Jennifer Gannon, 7 years on, isn't it?
There's like someone hissing in the background. Look, we love a political panto. We really do. That's our favourite thing in Ireland, apart from the Late Late Show, obviously. But it's like, I don't know, these things are a little bit of a sham in a way, because...
In what way, do you think?
I just think, like, the Claire Byrne debate was... I mean, in fairness, Claire Byrne was a lot better than she was before, as in with controlling people and actually, you know, cutting them off when they were waffling. And
well, in fairness, she did possibly the best 2016 general election debate. Yeah. I mean, going back that far.
It was like one of those fake elections that you used to do in primary school, because it was just, they're just vaguely waffling around a topic that they don't really seem to know much about and then just picking things out of the air. Gavin Duffy sounded like he literally was looking at Wikipedia on his phone. He's full of facts. And like, the thing about it is, they're, you know, it's Dragon's Den, the presidential edition, and the way that they're doing it is... They may be good businessmen and work in a boardroom, but they've literally, there's zero charisma there.
Okay, well, of course, tonight we have, well, all sorts of things, because it's the first full six-candidate debate. It is Pat Kenny again, albeit on a different station. Now he's on Virgin Media One rather than on RTE. And of course, I suppose, Pamela Joyce, what's going to happen now is that Peter Casey is effectively setting part of the agenda with his inflammatory comments about travellers, which... seems to have struck a chord with, we don't know, perhaps a sizable minority of people.
Yeah, I think the comments that were made were absolutely outrageous. And I read recently that he's actually going to Thurles tomorrow. We discussed this on The Week Trending on Friday.
Yes.
He's going to Thurles tomorrow to meet with members of the travelling community about that whole debacle.
Well, is he going to meet with members of the travelling community, or is he just going to visit and view the houses that they won't move into?
I think he was due to possibly meet with members of the travelling community, but given the comments, there's travellers representative groups even saying he's ill-informed, he's grossly insulting, he's offensive, and that he said that they shouldn't be classified as a minority group and that they're essentially camping on someone else's land.
Which is going to be interesting, though, to see, will he be allowed effectively to set part of the agenda tonight for this TV debate? I mean, is this something that should be ignored? Can it be ignored? I mean, has this allowed him perhaps to steal the limelight for tonight in a way that he wouldn't otherwise have managed?
Yeah, I think the comments he made were quite controlled, kind of off the cuff, and it will be interesting tonight to see how the questions are phrased and see how he responds to them, if he is going to try and go for damage control or if he's going to say, you know what, I'm standing by what
I said.
I'd say
he'll double down because it looks as though today, that's, you know, this evening, that's the way it was going. I think this is where Pat Kenny shines, in fairness to Pat. He really gets involved with these debates and, you know, he will ask the hard questions, and I think it will be really interesting to see what will happen, or even if they will mention, you know, the controversial dog grooming money, or has this moved on completely now, or will he still start, you know, waffling off about helicopters that nobody knows what he's talking about? Because it felt very much like on Claire Byrne he hadn't done his homework at all, and he literally had woken up and was just there and the studio, the light was
but
on.
But you see, the interesting point as well is, can these debates change the nature of the campaign? Well, last time round, in 2011, Sean Gallagher was ahead in the polls until that last debate. Now, could it be that Michael D. Higgins is so far ahead in the polls that actually nothing can shake it in these television debates?
I think the thing about it is, you know, I think you're confirming people's ideas really with these debates most of the time, I think, because you have it in your head who you want to vote for. And I think that, you know, because there's no hard policies to really eke out, because it's not, as in, it's not, you're not going for, you know, a political role as such. It's a nebulous thing, almost the presidency. So I think you know who you dislike the most, and that's, this is what will make you, you know, entrenched.
This is real life reality television.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't think it's going to change who's going to be like the actual presidency. I think it may change who will be the runner-up and how the polls are now, but I don't think it's going to change the actual outcome of the election.
And that's not us in any way showing any bias towards any particular candidate. It's just a sort of an analysis of the situation. When you see one poll last week putting Michael D. Higgins at 70%, the Irish Times poll this morning putting him at 66%, that's just a logical conclusion to draw. And I know people say the polls can be wrong, but the polls were very right in the referendums that we've had in recent years in this country. Okay, let's move on from that. That programme is on at 10 o'clock tonight. And just to know that I'm having a night off the Tonight Show tonight because of that, but we'll be back on tomorrow evening on Virgin Media One with that. Now, if The Inbetweeners was been pitched as a programme in 2018, would it be considered acceptable? Would it ever get broadcast? Before we talk about that, let's have a clip. And of course, we have to give a warning that there is inappropriate language in this particular scene from The Inbetweeners. Yeah, any scene you pick from The Inbetweeners will probably have inappropriate language.
Why don't we at least attempt to have a sophisticated conversation? I know it's a tall order and I'm not expecting sparkling, but let's give it a go, eh? As it is my fucking birthday!
How much Lego can you stuff up your bum?
Oh, for Christ's sake!
Not now, just like when you was younger, how much could you get up there?
You are grim, mate.
Why were you sticking Lego up your bum?
Not a lot, just like a rectangular one and a long one. Couple of singles, maybe.
And there are people listening to that probably horrified. Okay, were you a fan, Jennifer, of The Inbetweeners?
Yeah, not really, to be honest. I mean, it's fine. I know I can understand why people like it, but to be honest, I generally hate what James Buckley's whole attitude about this is. He has the interview that he gave about it was, you
explain
know,
the interview.
It's
please.
Cool at the moment to be offended, like in relations to things being too PC. And like, I get what he's saying in the context of characterization, as in you need a myriad of characters on, you know, TV shows or any kind of art form. You need there to be unlikable characters, untrustworthy narrators, etc., stupid characters. But I mean, you wouldn't want an echo chamber of, you know, entertainment show, but for far too long comedy especially has been an extremely masculine environment, and it's only really now that TV commissioners are paying attention to different voices, female writers, writers of colour, you know, gay writers, about their experiences. And this reminds me of something like Monty Python, Terry Gilliam said, you know, he's one of these old gatekeepers and they're rearing up on their hind legs now because they're afraid. And he had said before that, you know, Python wouldn't be made now, it wouldn't be commissioned now. Of course it would. We are in an era where TV shows like Your Face or Mine or Naked Attraction are commissioned. I mean, It's a show about... Jimmy Carr is still a viable option for people to hire these days. He's still successful. This is the world we're living in. And of course, a juvenile show about teens being idiots would still be commissioned because it's still that media that is prevalent.
Pamela, are you a fan of The Inbetweeners?
I was a massive fan of it. And it's purely because I identify as an Inbetweener. So The Inbetweener are the people who aren't particularly cool in school, but they're not the nerds and the dweebs or whatever you may call them. I identify as an Inbetweener. I think you have to take it for what it is. It's comedy. It's not a social commentary. It's just a bit of a laugh. Maybe some of the things that are a bit out there.
Does it go over the top at times too much?
I think at times it does, but that happens with a lot of things. I mean, people nowadays, you could say you could look at Friends, which went on for 10 years, one of the most successful TV shows of all time. People say it was very homophobic. There's not a lot of racial diversity in it. So you could say that about any show that has been on. Would it be made today? Would it be as successful? But at the time, I think it was thoroughly enjoyable. And if you take it for what it is, a comedy show...
Well, was The Inbetweeners too vulgar in many respects? Was it just too in your face in relation
to... It's not that. I mean, I don't mind any of that. I mean, you know, comedy is supposed to be challenging. It's supposed to be uncomfortable. It's supposed to be disruptive and anarchic. But it's just, I just don't like the point that he's trying to make that everybody's way too sensitive these days. And that's not the problem. The problem is other voices are now being heard these days. And, you know, this is what they have to deal with. And I just don't think that a lot of... straight white men who have controlled the industry, the entertainment industry, are really unhappy about this. And this is just somebody that's, you know, spitting his dummy out about something that would be successful if it was back on tomorrow. I think it's a stupid, redundant point to make. And I just think that he should, you know, instead of that, just kind of say how good at the moment it is, how viable comedy and vibrant it is at the moment.
I agree with quite a lot of that as well, but that is something that he put a lot of work into. It was on from 2008 to 2010, and they made two films out of it. So that's a project he put a lot of work into, a lot of effort, a lot of time. And if, you know, for people to come and maybe say, you know, that was no good, maybe for that era it was fine if it was confined to then. But I think... if you're putting that much work into something, you want to be proud of it.
But it was massively successful. So, I mean, like, he has no cause for complaint. And there's still fans of it now, you know? So, I mean, I don't really know what his point is.
Making a Murderer was remarkably successful. But, Pamela Joyce, do we need a second series of it?
So, it first came out in 2015, which I couldn't believe. I would have
that
said,
far back,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, December 2015, so nearly 3 years ago. It was all anybody could talk about. I think it was the fact that all the episodes came out at once. You can binge it. It's very binge-worthy. It does tend to slow down halfway through the series.
To be honest, I didn't get past episode 3.
Yeah, I got to about 6 or 7.
So don't know if Brendan Dassey went to the WWF, the WrestleMania.
Well, it was so well covered, I think we all kind of know what happened. I think there is a need for a second season, considering how many... holes there were in the defences in the prosecution story, everything that was going on at the end of the last season. Basically, both of them, Brendan Dassey and Stephen Avery, are sent to jail, and Stephen Avery files an appeal, which is rejected, and he then asks for to see all his files and everything to see if he can come up with something himself.
Yeah. I wasn't going to shout spoiler alert because, in fairness, well, if you don't know the outcome of Making a Murderer now, and we have to know what the start of season 2 is, but do we really need it, Jennifer? I mean...
The Secret of the Ooze, Making a Murderer 2. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like second album syndrome. I kind of worry in the way that, like, you have your whole life to make your first album, basically. And the filmmakers spent 10 years researching, you know, for the first part. And they uprooted their lives and moved to Wisconsin. And, you know, they put a lot of work into this. And this one is really just a recap. It's like a catch-up after everything has happened. I suppose with Brendan Dassey, he did make an appeal and it was rejected by the Supreme Court, so he's still in prison. I think that's something that they wanted to, you know, to highlight, because there was this whole issue about, was he intellectually challenged, and he should have had somebody else with him when he was signing everything or making a statement. I don't know though. I mean, it's all very well because there's a massive rise in, like, true crime genre, you know, and armchair sleuths have been following the case since 2015, so I think they'll want to know how this story is going. But I mean, I think it just, you know, really, I hope they focus on something like, what are the effects, what effects do the original series have on, like, say, the, you know, the victim's family, on the Halbach family, and the moral questions that arise from, like, turning real life into some kind of whodunit entertainment. You know, I don't know if they will address that, but I think that's something that they should.
Okay. The Late Late Show went to London last Friday evening. It had an average audience of 610,000, making it the most watched Late Late Show so far in 2018. That will be beaten by the Toy Show, obviously. What was it like, Pamela? Did you watch it?
I tuned in for a brief moment. I thought it was just a bit try-hard. I thought it was trying to do something that wasn't necessary. They had a lot of the guests they had would have been guests they would have had back in Dublin anyway. So I think it was a bit of a spectacle. Now, it was nice to bring it abroad. Ryan Tuberty said, you know, it was to kind of, with all these Brexit issues and everything, to show the camaraderie and the relationship between these two islands that we have. I just think it was a bit unnecessary. And the whole thing with the tickets, it could have been far better planned. Even listening to it was very echoey. The audio wasn't great. It just wasn't a particularly enjoyable show. I would have much preferred that back in Dublin.
Yeah, it's like The Late Late in London, it's as arbitrary as, you know, hosting it on the moon. I mean, like, honestly, it just sometimes feels like The Late Late is just a talk show that exists in, like, the Irish collective unconsciousness or consciousness. It's like a Gondry film where, like, you know, that episode of Seinfeld where Kramer decorated his apartment like the Merv Griffin show. It's like, it doesn't matter anymore what it is. All that happened in this was that he was sitting on a different side.
Yeah,
Ryan
but
was
hold on,
on
but
the
by
other
going,
side.
By going to London, they managed to grab the audience.
Yeah, but they didn't do anything with it. It was the same.
Graham Norton on.
Yeah, and he's told them to switch over to BBC One when his show was starting, and he was dead right. I mean, it's just, you had expats like Imelda May, and their chats were all about, you know, what a great little country Ireland is, and, you know, cheering every time your hometown was named. And it was just all very parochial, and it felt like, you know, flat, the televisional equivalent of like flat TK Red Lemonade. It was just, I don't know why you'd move the show over to London for a night and then have a lineup that's, like you said, been on the show a million times before. And then if you don't, like, other than that, they just had the most odious creature, like Nigel Farage, polluting up the screen with his absolute rubbish. And
yeah,
the
but
only
he was
good
taken
thing,
on by Alistair
that's
Campbell.
The only good thing that was about it, like, he almost went full Malcolm Tucker on him, which was quite entertaining to watch. But other than that, it was a real missed opportunity. Like, you would have expected the guest list to be a bit more vibrant and have actually other, you know, British celebrities maybe on it. And they just, I think it was a missed opportunity.
And of course, there was also the issue of the tickets, that they made a hames of the ticketing of the event, Pamela.
Yes, so basically we were told, go on, apply for these tickets. You're told you have these tickets. It was massively oversubscribed. The people who run it was called Applause Store, so they are an English group.
They didn't understand, I think, that when Irish people get a Late Late Show ticket, they turn up.
Yeah.
There's an expectation, a lot of free tickets for events, that maybe about a third of people don't actually show up for them. But that doesn't apply to the Late Late Show.
Not at all. So
surely
they said,
somebody should have told them that.
So they said, basically, we need to cover ourselves because these tickets are free. A lot of people are no-shows. We need to make sure that we do have enough audience for what's going on. So 1,200 fans got tickets, but this also included, like, people, guest lists and things like that. So we don't know how many people who actually applied for tickets went in. There was people waiting there from 4 p.m. so that's 5 hours before the show actually went on air. Elderly people left standing, pregnant women left standing, people have been there for hours and just to be told, no, sorry, actually you can't get in.
It's like some kind of ironic, you know, immigration viewpoint. But like, it's just, I don't know, I think they run X Factor and they run Britain's Got Talent. Yeah, so I mean, like, you'd expect them to have, you know, the
they just don't understand the whole thing about Late Late Show tickets.
That we're
clearly
addicted to it for no reason.
Okay, picks of the week, what's your one, Pamela, for us?
Mine is an unusual one. It's called Elite. It's on Netflix. It came out the week before last. I actually originally started watching it because it's in Spanish, just to practice my Spanish. I hadn't practiced
it in a long
time.
Is there
subtitles on it? There is. You can watch it dubbed.
And what is it?
It is basically a murder mystery. It's set in a town in Spain, and it kind of starts at the end, so you're shown the crime and it works backwards and pieces together slowly and all these little subplots start coming in. It is very, very good. Like I said, you can dub it or you can watch it with subtitles. So I was very surprised by it. I was like, I'll watch one episode, practice my Spanish, grand. Sucked in, I watched 8 episodes in 3 days.
Okay, yeah. That's a good recommendation. What's your pick, Jennifer?
Get your Amazon Prime subscription, everyone. The Romanoffs, and it's Matthew Weiner's new show, Mad Men. And the thing about The Romanoffs is you can't binge on it. They're doing it old school, so it's one episode comes out every Friday. The first episode was last Friday. And it's pretty much heavyweight prestige TV. Like, the cast list is insane. You have people like Isabelle Huppert, Aaron Eckhart, Corey Stahl, Diane Lane, and also Mad Men alumni like Christina Hendricks and John Slattery. But Mad Men, it isn't. If you're expecting something, you know, as in, like, very in-depth as that, it's not. It's a lot more, there's a lot more humour in it. It's basically about delusions of grandeur. It's about all these people. It's different vignettes, so different stories about people who believe they're descendants from Russian royalty, so they believe they're descendants from the illustrious Romanov family. But it's all separate stories.
It's getting very mixed reviews.
Some people love it
and some people think it's absolute nonsense.
It has beautiful locations, like you got Russia, New York, Mexico, Paris. It's very expensive, well shot. And I think give it a chance. I don't know. It's a, you know, you can't binge on it, so we'll have to wait and see how it goes.
Okay, thank you very much, both of you, Jennifer Gannon and Pamela Joyce, of course, from our early morning show here on Today FM, starting at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Yep.
Okay.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.